The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
The Bill Myers Show is on 106.3 KMET, 89.3 KCMD.
Kristen Roberts is an intellectual property attorney. And Kristen, you deal regularly in the specialized fields of trademark and copyright registration. And you founded, or at least co-founded, I guess, or did you found it, Trestle Law in San Diego? Welcome to the show. It's great to have you on.
I founded the firm. Yep, I founded the firm actually 10 years ago yesterday, believe it or not.
Oh, well, happy birthday to the firm. Nothing else, okay?
Thank you.
Hey, artificial intelligence has been making big rounds here, and you, of course, are about intellectual property. It's the trademark and copyright registrations. In other words, if I were to call my restaurant McDougal's, you would sue on behalf of McDonald's against me. Is that kind of what you do for a living then in your firm at Trestle Law?
Yeah, that's correct. And I love the Coming to America reference.
Okay. And you've worked with Walmart and Target and Lululemon and Chipotle and a bunch more. And so you're there to make sure that people's or companies or individual stuff stays their stuff, right? That's essentially what you do, just to be clear, right?
That's correct. Yeah, absolutely.
What happens in the world now with OpenAI and other chatbots out there able to do such sound-alike impersonations of individuals that, well, you have Scarlett Johansson as an example suing over this right now, saying that their chatbot sounds like her. And it does. You know, there's a lot to be said. It sounds very, very similar to her. How can you, what do you do on this kind of stuff? Where do you see this this kind of law going?
Well, I definitely think there are several ways that this area of law is going to go because it impacts many different aspects of intellectual property. So there's legal and ethical implications. There's the overall impact on the entertainment industry. There are technological aspects. And then there's also like industry and public responses that we have to consider as well. I think right out the gate, everything that we've heard in terms of the law, and the law is very slow to catch up to what's happening in technology. We lawyers joke that everything is about, you know, 10 to 20 years behind from a legal perspective.
Oh, yeah. The legislatures and Congress said they'll just be figuring out how to use the AI chatbot before they try, before they start
exactly.
trying to do something about this, I guess. All right. So the law essentially is behind the times is what you're saying. Would that be fair? A fair assessment as to where we are right now?
That's absolutely fair. And right now they've drawn sort of a hard line, which is anything that AI touches is not protectable by copyright. So, for example, if you use a chatbot to come up with content for you, that content is not going to be protectable because the AI generated it. But there becomes some, you know, gray areas because people have to input the information into the AI. So there's a lot of questions about, well, how far does that law extend? And we're really going to see that transform over the years with case law.
How is this working in the world of art, so to speak? Because I've noticed that now my wife, Linda, likes to go on social media with a lot of what they call them design channels in which people will put up designs of rooms, designs of homes, things like that. And she's starting to realize that a lot of what she thought was original material is now turning into artificial intelligence. You start to see some clues, you know, after a while. And can you copy? So you're saying you can't copyright that kind of stuff in which you tell, all right, I want you to do this room in a Baroque style or something like that. And then you can't copyright it and say you stole it from me, right?
That's right. Absolutely. And there's actually a recent case that just came down addressing just that. A guy tried to copyright a piece of AI art saying that he owned the AI and therefore it was a work made for hire. And the copyright office said no. And then that went up to a higher court and that higher court also said no. They said, nope, it's created by a machine and therefore it is not protectable.
It's created by a machine, but it is programmed by humans largely. Is it not, though? Is this where the gray area is in the law, perhaps?
That's 100% right. That is exactly where the gray area lies. And we're going to see a lot of that, I think, transform over time because That actually happened with photography, believe it or not, when cameras first became commercially available. The Copyright Office originally was saying, well, it was photographs were created by a machine, a camera, therefore they can't be protected by copyright. And clearly that law has evolved over time, and I think we're going to see the same thing here in AI. I don't think there's going to be this hardline rule, but that's where they start, right? So the law always starts somewhere, and then it kind of expounds as things progress.
Kristen, I haven't used AI a lot. I played around, dabbled with it like many people. I know my boss has really gotten big into it. Is anything that AI does, does it have a watermark, or is it identifiable in some ways as having been created by an AI or not? I mean, where are we right now in that technology? And I'm sorry if it's a stupid question, just trying to figure out if you can prove that it was AI.
No, that's not a stupid question. And there are technologies being developed to identify whether things are AI or not, but it is still very challenging, especially because a lot of times, especially if you're using these sort of learning language model programs like, for example, ChatGPT, if you're taking what it spits back out at you, but you are modifying it to make it yours, it sometimes becomes very difficult to tell where your work begins and their work ends. And in my opinion, that therein lies the problem in terms of saying it's not protectable, because how do you really determine what was generated by the machine and what was added by you?
All right. So do you believe then that forever artificial intelligence will be left uncopyrightable, and that it's only going to have to be something completely created by human hands or thought and or the word processor or my hand or the brush for my painting or the illustration for my cartoon? Where do you see it going, in your opinion?
In my opinion, I see this going in a couple of different ways, but as far as it relates to things like art and writing, I believe it's going to go to where you can protect what you put in. So, for example, in order to get a certain photograph, you have to give the AI certain instructions. I think those instructions and how you are asking the AI to generate something, I think that is going to be protectable, but I don't necessarily think that the resulting material will be. And I think that's where we're seeing it headed, and it might even expand from there. But I think that's where we're going to start to see some cracks in this hardline rule that we have right now.
How about copyright infringement on something which sounds close to but is not the same as? And I'll give you an example. This is something I've been wondering what would happen in the talk radio world if at some point Rush Limbaugh, the late Rush Limbaugh, very famous talk show, he's like the biggest talk show of all time in the United States of America, if someone were to say, or even the Limbaugh estate would say, hey, we're going to have an AI Rush and feed the modern news in it and things and have it riff away. And, you know, are we going to see more of that kind of stuff? We don't really know what's real and what's not.
Yeah, absolutely. Deepfakes and also use of voices. For example, you mentioned the radio. I mean, that's a medium where you don't see somebody's face, but you hear their voice.
Right.
And voices are very identifiable. They're, you know, using somebody's voice without their permission is like using somebody's credit card without permission, right? And we already see this happening. We have you mentioned Rush Limbaugh, but George Carlin's estate has already settled a lawsuit over AI-generated imitation of Carlin's voice. So we are, and you know, Scarlett Johansson, we have the same issue happening with her and OpenAI. The case is settled, but name and likeness does become a big issue, and I think one of the biggest issues we're seeing is that there isn't a standard federal law that protects voices. It's all patchwork based on the laws in each state because it falls under privacy laws, not necessarily intellectual property laws.
When it comes to suing over infraction or, you know, copyright infringement here with someone imitating your voice, how close does it have to be? Because, you know, if you were to take a, you know, an AI generated Scarlett Johansson and then you put it next to Johansson, would it actually match? If you were to take it and put the digital file together, would it look exact? Because, you know, voices are very, very specific, much like fingerprints when you put them up there.
Yeah, and that's a great question. So there was an older case, actually, where Bette Midler sued. I don't know if you remember Bette Midler, but Bette Midler, I love her, sued over her the use of an impersonator. So she wanted to, Ford wanted to use her voice in a commercial.
Right.
And she said no. So they went out and they hired an impersonator to sound similar to her. And she was able to win that case. So I think we have enough case law to show that it doesn't have to be exact in order to have protectable interest in your voice. It just has to be recognizable enough that a regular person who would hear it would associate that voice with that actor or that famous person.
So comedians, people who do impersonations, they aren't going to be sued over this kind of stuff unless they're trying to imitate someone for commercial purposes, right? In other words, to sell something without permission, right? Is that true?
Right, that's correct. I mean, they have comedians, you know, they have a fair use when they're doing impersonations. But if they were to go and try to pretend to be that person that they're impersonating on a commercial for pay, that's where it could get problematic. Yes, absolutely.
Kristen Roberts, once again, an intellectual property attorney. Her firm is TressleLaw.com. In fact, if you have these kind of issues that you'd like to get involved with, just go to TressleLaw.com. They'll certainly help you. You'll certainly, you know, look into this. All right, so the laws are behind. About how long do you think it's going to take for the laws to start catching up with the technology, or is it going to be kind of a, you know, the dog chasing its tail? How do you see it?
You know, unfortunately, that's kind of how it always is with the law. I think it's going to be always going to be a few years behind because the law is designed to move slowly because we don't want the law to change overnight when technology changes overnight. And so, you know, I think it's going to take a while, probably 10 years. I think it's always about 10 years behind, especially when it relates to copyright law.
Do you think we're ever going to get to the point where the law itself becomes artificial intelligence and then, you know, we're just going to have AI chatbots arguing cases? That may sound silly, I know, but it's kind of a crazy world sometimes.
You know, I don't think it sounds silly because we already had an attorney try to, or I don't even think it was an attorney. I think it was there already was somebody that tried to appear using a chatbot of some kind. As a representation, I think it was for a parking ticket, and that got shut down very quickly. But I do see that going that way in the future. I just don't know how much it's going to be AI versus how much it's going to be people. I could see it being a human being that uses it as a tool because we're already seeing attorneys do that.
Boy, it's a new frontier of trademark law and everything else. That's for sure here, Kristen. The other thing I was sort of wondering is that ultimately, which businesses do you think are going to be probably jettisoning more people than others when it comes to the infiltration of artificial intelligence and the chatbot into the work, especially when it comes to automating standard procedures of some sort? Do you talk much about that among yourselves at the firm?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we talk a lot about industries that are already being impacted, like, for example, copywriters. So people that write copy for other companies, people are saying, you know what, we're not going to keep you in-house anymore or hire out for these vendors anymore. We'll just go with ChatGPT or we'll just stick with one of these language learning models that can generate what we need them to generate. We also see a lot of people, you mentioned your own wife, going into these Facebook groups and they're posting up pictures of designs and things like that. And I see a lot more of the graphic design work, you know, relying less on people and more on, you know, these sort of AI models. So I definitely see that those industries being impacted currently. But, you know, anything that doesn't require a person, so drive-through windows at the, you know, fast food restaurants, they're already trying to lower costs, human capital. We already have one here in San Diego, the Carl's Jr. down the road from my house. We drove up one day and there wasn't a person working there anymore. It was an AI model.
Was there anybody working inside making the hamburgers, or do they have the AI doing the hamburgers too? I know that that's where they're. I mean, when you're talking about the minimum wage laws in Oregon and California, especially, my goodness, computers start looking cheap, huh?
That's right. And so, no, there were still people working inside the store to, you know, verify the order and make sure things were okay, cooking it. But they don't need a single person anymore working that. You know, communication device. So they wind up lowering their costs by shaving down as much as they can on the people that work in those industries. And we see that also with the checkout lanes at various stores. You know, those models are going to get more and more sophisticated And eventually, the number of people that we need are going to become fewer and fewer.
All right. So the artificial intelligent chatbot can then get your order wrong. I can't wait.
I think it already did get our order wrong once, but we were lucky that there was a person there working, so we could ask them to fix it.
Oh, that is too funny. Kristen, I wonder if this is going to have a strange boomerang effect in some sorts that some forms of art and or writing and let's say music to an extent may become more prized in the future because of it actually being organic or not. Do you see that possibly happening, given that you are out there protecting intellectual property?
Yeah, I absolutely do. And I think a lot of art will become more valuable, too, right, over time. So artwork that was originally created by humans, if we get to a place where the majority of it is no longer created by people, you know, these artists that came out in the, I hate to say 1900s because it makes me feel very old.
Hey, that's okay. I came out in the 1900s also. I get that. All right. I really do, Kristen. I do.
Right. But really, though, I mean, if you think about the future, and this is happening so fast, you know, we were thinking that this AI stuff was going to take 50 years, and it's really looking more like 10 to 20, right? So in our lifetimes, we're going to see a huge change and a huge shift in these technologies. And I think you're absolutely right. It could very well value a lot of this work that's created by and completed by humans much more greatly.
Well, I'll tell you what, Kristen, when you're lobbying the state legislature in California about intellectual property rights with your position at TrestleLaw.com, start asking, hey, what we want is one of those little bubbles that has, you know, instead of the bubble that says registered trademark or TM or all the rest of it, just have it say GH, genuine human. How about that? What do you think?
I think it needs to definitely be a secondary mark identifier that we have on something, right? So it's a quality stamp, right? We know it's done by humans. But then you wonder, is it really quality? Because at some point, these machines are going to make fewer mistakes than people. Right now, that's not the case. But I definitely think in the future, the better these things get, the more accurate these are going to be. And people might say, you know, it's done by a human. Ooh, I don't want that. I want the machine because it does it better.
Except that some of our best art and some of our best movies and things have had mistakes, technically mistakes,
yep,
that actually made them human, that made them real, that made them relatable. So,
yeah, and done on the fly too, right? So we have people that throw in a line that wasn't originally written, and it makes the entire scene. So I 100% agree with you. I definitely think we need people, but I do think that there are some out there who would rather rely on a machine than a person, and that's what worries me.
What a fascinating conversation. I could probably talk to you for 3 hours, but hey, we're out of time now, and I know you have your day job to work, but I appreciate you taking a few minutes to share about this in San Diego. By the way, is it hot? What's it like in San Diego today? It's a little rainy up here for us.
Well, we are deep into our two favorite seasons of the year, May gray and June gloom. So it is overcast and chilly here in San Diego.
Okay. Well, it'll get hot soon enough, I'm sure. Kristen, thank you so much. TrestleLaw.com. Thanks for sharing a few minutes about this. It's a fascinating form of law. We're going to hear more about this.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate you.
Oh, my pleasure. It is 729 at KMED and 99.3 KBXG.
Hey, I want to ask you this. With interest rates on the rise, how will your home sale be affected? Hey, it's Lars Larson. Can you still make money on your property? Well, here's the answer. Call the only agent in Medford I trust to make me top dollar, Jared Hokanson with Hokanson Realty. Jared and his team are local to Medford, and they know exactly how to make this market work for you. They'll get your home sold for top dollar no matter what the marketplace is doing. The thing is, Jared has options and strategies that get your home sold fast. His top industry-leading marketing creates demand for your home, driving up the price. And best of all, Jared guarantees to sell your home at a price and a deadline you agree to, or he'll buy it. Now you know why real estate expert and Shark Tank star Barbara Corcoran and I can't stop talking about Jared Hokanson right here in Medford. Call him today, 541-772-SOLD, or go online to 541-772-SOLD.com. That's 541-772-SOLD.com.
When you choose a contractor, how do you know you're getting the best? Anyone can claim to be the area's top, but numbers don't lie. When you hire Clouser Drilling, you're getting a company that has 1 million feet, 4,600 wells, 53 years, and four generations drilling here in Josephine and Jackson County. Clouser Drilling has six licensed drillers and four modern drill rigs, giving customers confidence in one great product. The number's 541-476-7795. The name's Clouser. Contact Clouser Drilling today.
At Pressure Point Roofing, our dedicated team of repair and maintenance professionals work on hundreds of roofs a year. We can see where problems can start on your home or commercial property. We have the years of experience and commitment to quality that you need to protect your home or business. Having an annual inspection can prevent you from suffering through the damage, stress, and costs of an interior repair. Just like your car's oil change, preventative work can save you money and headaches. To schedule a repair and inspection, or to learn more how a maintenance program can help you, visit PressurePointRoofing.com.
This is the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMET.
7:32. Wayne is here. Hey, Wayne, how are you doing this morning? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing well, thank you. I just wanted to talk a little bit about the AI issue, and specifically my expertise was in technical radiology.
So are you? Are you retired now from that?
Absolutely, and loving it.
Okay. Nothing wrong with loving the retirement there. I'm glad you're getting you some good retirement. So what are you thinking then about artificial intelligence? Because I know it has been really getting into the medical world big time. And what is your overall feeling about that?
Well, first of all, it's been going on for at least 10 years, maybe 15, ever since they went to digital radiology, digitally making images instead of putting them on film. And so there are, for instance, like in mammography, there's assisted diagnosis, so the machine will mark areas, the computer will mark areas on the images, and it'll draw the radiologist's attention to look at that area, to give it further analysis. Also in bone densitometry, which is another kind of machine and diagnostic process, the computer will actually generate pre-canned radiology reports, depending on what the scan actually shows.
I'm kind of curious, Wayne, in your experience there, you know, before you retired, even so, the artificial intelligence looking at that has already been part of medicine. You're right. Has there ever been a time in which the machine's been wrong? Can you recall?
Well, that's an interesting question, because is it going to be another machine that says it's wrong, or is it going to be a person saying, no, I disagree?
Oh, I was just thinking that if you had a mammography as an example, right? You have a mammography of a woman, and so you have this done, and then it's marking something and says that this is a. Does it actually say that this is a tumor, or does it say here's something which we're a little suspicious about? How deep does it go?
Well, I'm going to say, because I'm retired and it probably has progressed a little since I was in it, but I'm going to say that basically it's saying here is something that looks suspicious. And so then it's going to be up to presumably a human being to do a further analysis of it. But when, it's interesting because you mentioned a tumor. You know, that's a phrase or a name that's, you know, emotionally charged.
Right. There are
all kinds of tumors that once you biopsy them, they're benign. So, yeah, you can call it a tumor, but it's not anything to get excited about. So it's a complex world out there.
Yeah. Well, let me put it this way. Is it helpful?
Oh, absolutely it's helpful. It's helpful in the sense that it certainly allows them to process more information more quickly.
I'm curious about people like my own daughter, Sarah. I don't think she does this work anymore, but in the early part of her medical world career,
right. She
worked in a lab in Portland, and she would spend all day being given slides from people who had samples given to them to detect cancer. And so she would sit there all day and looking at these cancer slides all day and just try to determine what was going on. I wonder if those kind of jobs will become less and less common.
Well, what the inventors of the programming are going to say is it makes the person be more efficient. That's what they're going to say. But here's another comment would be, Well, from the attorney's standpoint, and it's a silly question or statement, but who gets sued, the AI or the person?
Oh, I know. You know, that's what. Thank you for having mentioned that. I should have asked that, and I've thought about that. Of course, the AI is just the tool. You know, we don't sue the. Well, of course, they are trying to sue the gun makers behind the gun, rather than the person actually working it. But that's been smacked down so far here. That's thought-provoking, isn't it? Who do you sue ultimately?
Yes, and you can take it even further. You can go to the issue of quality control.
Uh-huh.
So are your quality control systems in place, which are going to help supposedly ensure that you don't make as many mistakes?
Yeah, I would imagine that in hospitals and in the medical world, given the propensity for lawsuits, they're going to be very, very careful about turning it completely over to AI. Would you think that'd be right? About right?
Yes, I mean, they're illegal. There's also ethical issues concerning the AI.
Yeah, but because if you can't sue the AI, right? Who do you sue, right? That sort of thing. Wayne? Appreciate the call, and thanks for making that from Grants Pass, all right? Really do appreciate that. 737, this is KMED and 99.3 KBXG.
Longer days and warming weather means more time outside. Terra Firma Foundation Systems wants you to know if your outdoor patio is uneven, cracked, settling, or separating, Terra Firma can help. Restore your sunken concrete in just a few hours. The foam technology settles underneath and lifts your concrete. It's fast and affordable and improves the look and safety of your patios and pathways. Get your outdoor spaces ready with Terra Firma. Visit goterrafirma.com. That's goterrafirma.com. CCB 173547.
The email of the day on the Bill Myers Show, sponsored by Central Point Family Dentistry. See all they have to offer at centralpointfamilydentistry.com and call for an appointment. Dr. Steve Nelson and his staff are next to Mazatlan Mexican Restaurant, just off Pine in Central Point. News is sponsored by Millette Construction, specializing in foundation repair and replacement. Get on solid ground by visiting MilletteConstruction.com.
With SRN News, I'm Rich Thomason. It is an historic election in Mexico where Claudia Sheinbaum becomes the country's first female president. The former Mexico City mayor was also the governing party's presidential candidate. Hunter Biden's trial on federal firearms charges underway today in Wilmington, Delaware, jury selection. Prosecutors say that Biden illegally bought a gun in October of 2018, falsely swearing on a federal form that he had not used drugs. Two dozen people were shot, one died, a mass shooting in Akron, Ohio. Happened yesterday morning during a birthday party. The water situation in Atlanta is slowly returning to normal following a couple of water main breaks that turned life upside down for a lot of people. On Wall Street, stocks are mixed. The Dow down 38 points, the Nasdaq 124 points higher, and the S&P is up 15 points. More details, srnnews.com.
This hour of the Bill Myers Show is proudly sponsored by Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros on Main Street in Phoenix.
Hi, Jason with Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros with more spring savings. Right now, purchase a set of four qualifying Yokohama tires through June 15th and get up to a $100 rebate. Get an additional $50 when you purchase with your Tire Pros credit card. There's 14 different tires to choose from, including Geolander AT for your truck or SUV and the Avid Ascend LX for your passenger car. So stop by or call for details to save right now on quality Yokohama tires exclusively at Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros.
When Paul Simon released the song Slip Sliding Away in 1975, he lamented how we can watch our destiny pass by us. Millette Construction thinks it's also a good reminder that if the ground is slipping and sliding beneath your house, it may be nearing a destination where there's cracks in walls and sloping floors. Give Millette a call for an estimate to fix the damage and correct the issue that's causing the damage. Oh, and an interesting factoid, the Oak Ridge Boys sing backup for that song. Visit MilletteConstruction.com.
You may need extra time at Freddy's Diner.
Let's see. The fried chicken dinner sounds delicious. Wait. Smoked brisket? Ooh, hickory smoked ribeye. Chicken fried steak smothered in country gravy.
Welcome to Freddy's. Our Friday and Saturday dinner special is hickory smoked prime rib. Are you ready to order?
I'm going to need a few more minutes.
I'll be back.
Freddy's Diner on Main in Old Town Eagle Point.
Open 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. every day for lunch and dinner.
Go with your gut. Your dog's immune system is based in the gut. A diet lacking in nutrients can cause itching, scratching, and a weak immune system. However, there is a solution. D-I-N-O-V-I-T-E. DinoVite.
It took a grand total of 2 weeks. The dog stopped itching, the hair stopped falling out.
Try DinoVite for free. Just pay shipping and handling. Learn more at dinovite.com/radio.
Happier, healthier with every bite. Over a million pets helped with DinoVite.
Hi, I'm Lamont from Orleans, and I'm on 106.7 KMED.
Appreciate you being here. It's 19 before 8. Also appreciate State Representative Dwayne Junker back on the program. Morning, Dwayne. How are things?
Well, I got a little scratchy in my throat, so hopefully I'll make it through this. But overall, I'm over my depression from last week on the Trump thing, but I'll be okay.
Okay, good. Yeah. So you went out there and maybe hit some golf balls or did what I did. I weed whacked. I spent about 3.5 hours popping weeds out of the backyard that had just gone crazy there. And it was very satisfying, and I was absolutely exhausted. So whatever depression I had before was replaced by tired. So that's okay. It worked out.
Yeah.
Hey, you ended up hitting me up the other day about the Department of Administrative Services economic and revenue forecast for the state of Oregon. And this is more or less the blueprint of where the state is going to be headed, where they're figuring things are going to be, and what policy decisions need to be done over the next is it a 2-year biennium that they forecasted for?
Well, I think so, but they get these economists come out four times a year and give us their. Now, you remember, these economists work for the governor, so there is always a spin on these things of how they're, pushing it out to the people. And obviously the governor and the, Republicans don't own the state, but the Democrats want to make things look good.
Okay, well, I know that the general news stories that came out about this were basically generally pop up. Are optimistic, wouldn't you agree? That most of us, it's going to be kind of like, almost like it seemed like a slow and steady kind of approach to economic growth and various issues. Would you agree with that, or am I misreading what I'm hearing?
No, I think that's what the news outlets put it as, and the major one is the Oregon Capital Chronicle, which you got to understand the Oregon Capital Chronicle is more of a Democratic arm of the Oregon.
Okay.
So they're going to put, positive spins on things.
So if you were actually putting out the report, they would have reported it as this is this is the most horrendous piece of spin ever. But since it's being put out by their friends, okay, get it. All right, I understand. So there's always going to be a little bit of bias, so just to accept that as part of the process.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what are we looking at right now? How do you see then how the state is predicting it's going to be versus what might be actually occurring on the ground and maybe some policy things that they've decided that we're going to go one way direction, good and hard, let's say. What say you?
Well, I look at the manufacturing. To me, manufacturing is a key area. Now, I'm not an economist. Let's get that out of the way right away. But, it doesn't take, I don't think, a very smart person just to understand that, our manufacturing is what really in Oregon. We don't have military bases. We don't have these big industries, but we have natural resources and manufacturing. And if you look at the scale they showed, Oregon is in a deficit in everything but one thing. And that one thing is computer electronic, but that's being pushed up by taxpayer dollars. And that's the semiconductors.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at metals and machinery, you look at food, wood product, transportation, non-durables, they're all in the negative.
So we're seeing less manufacturing overall, period, right?
Yeah, and this is since, April 2019 till April 2024. So that's not a good sign. And another thing is we're looking at the fourth lowest birth rate in the country. We're looking at a lower workforce, and, we used to have a steady population of people migrating to Oregon. We're not having that. Families are moving out, and the only people who are moving in is illegals. So these are all bad signs that I see. We're not having the natural growth that we usually do. Families are not staying here.
I find that interesting that you said that we have the fourth lowest fertility rate in the state of Oregon, according to this report, right?
Well, it's not in the report, but it just came out yesterday, and the fourth lowest birth rate in the country. I mean, people having children.
You know, having children is usually an indicator of confidence in the future. Would you agree on that?
I would agree with that. And confidence in your state and where you're living, mm-hmm. those things. They're leaving the state of Oregon to go somewhere else. That's the future workforce.
So we have some dark clouds when it comes to fertility and birth rate. That's an issue then. How much of that birth rate, though, and I know it's not in the report, how much of that, I didn't see that birth rate thing, how much of that was dictated with maybe perhaps graying of the state of Oregon, in which you have older people moving to Oregon for a nice climate or whatever, and then they're naturally not going to have any children, so to speak, demographics?
Well, we usually have a lot, you know, especially in Southern, we have a big flex of Californians that retire and move here. And they got more money. And I don't know if that is happening as fast as it is. Mm-hmm. I think it's slowed down a little bit. And another thing I just looked up was, you know, where we stand of our neighbors. You know, we're the lowest. Idaho, you know, Washington, California, Idaho are all doing better than Oregon.
Does anyone ever really ask that question, why Oregon has difficulty competing with California, Idaho, and Washington? Because especially Idaho and Washington, you would think that we would be a little more pure. You know, we can't be as big as California. We're not going to be, right?
No. Washington's actually on the top. If you look at the list of economy, Washington is doing very well. You know, and they're not a purple or, you know, red state. They are a blue state, but they are making better decisions. I mean, I don't know. They do have a lot of military there.
I have a feeling that may be driving a lot of it, wouldn't you think? The military industrial complex?
That brings a lot of money into your state and economy and keeps jobs and keeps things going. Uh-huh. So that could be it. California has a lot of that. I don't, you know, Idaho, a red state. I know a lot of people are migrating to that area. That could be the reason. Again, I'm not an economist. I'm just looking at the data and going, wow, Oregon's not making the best. I would say we should be working on manufacturing. That's the key of our rural areas.
Well, it's interesting that you bring up about the manufacturing. I think that's an important deal. Oregon Live over the weekend had this article. I saved it for our talk here. And it declares that Oregon factories keep shedding jobs, and state economists are saying that this is a bit alarming. And they've been talking about this for the last 18 months or so, even though the job market would appear to be healthy, but factories, bigger part for blue-collar and lower-income people, and I guess they're kind of concerned about that. So that's one of the danger signs that we see in our report coming out here, huh?
Yeah, Pacific Foods is cutting 300 workers, some on Tualatin or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's a big problem. 300 workers, you know, so when you start seeing these major factories cutting workers, you know, and I don't think the governor really sees it because, you know, she looks at this and she goes, well, you know, the forecast calls for more spending on housing, schools, and behavior health. Wow.
Okay, wait a minute. Okay, so this is from the Oregon Economic and Revenue Forecast. So more housing, more health, more mental health, and what was the other part of it that she's calling for?
Schools, housing, schools, and behavior health.
Okay, why would you be calling for more schools given that the population of young people is going down or is not growing? Why would you need more schools? This is just a question, though. I think it's a reasonable question to ask. Not that I'm anti-school, but let's be realistic. We know that even over in Three Rivers, one of the reasons that Bond went down was because they're keeping schools open rather than consolidating a bit, and they've lost about a third of their enrollment over the last few years.
I would agree. I mean, why would we be spending more money on schools when people are not putting their kids in schools? They're either choosing to homeschool or some other or a private school or some other area. Mm. Where this is all taxpayer dollars. I mean, we have a if you look at, you know, they're talking about the kicker again. We're going to have the kicker in 2026. Well, that means you're taxing us too much. I would say you're taxing us too much.
Yeah, you're paying too much.
And when they take your tax dollars and hold on to it, they're making money off of you. You know, they can invest it or get interest off of it, the state of Oregon. Well, it's not staying in your pocket. It's not staying in your bank account. You're not getting to invest it. So you're losing out. Even if they give you some of your money back, you're still losing out.
Yeah, you lost on the use of that money for the year or two that they're going back to. That makes sense. State Representative Dwayne Junker here. We're talking about the Oregon Economic and Revenue Forecast. So they're calling for more housing, more more mental health. But you know, all of these are expenses, are they not?
Well, they're expenses. The way that I see the Democratic Party and the governor is like their way of the economy is taxpayer dollars. You know, like the Intel chips.
Right.
We don't. That's not a natural job that you're. It grows naturally. You're trying to infuse it and grow it faster than naturally. When we should be working on the, there's another. I don't have all this because there's so much here. We should be working on trucking and other things that keep like if I look at the cycle of money, you want to keep your money locally. So if you have a manufacturing plant that brings money in and jobs in, they spend their money locally. They spend it in the same area, and other jobs grow because those service industries are growing. We're not doing that. That's not what we're working on. I mean, where does the housing, schools, and behavioral health do that? It doesn't.
Well, you know, the behavioral health, I'm sure, has to do with a reaction to the fentanyl epidemic and crisis. Wouldn't you think that's probably what a lot of that is? You know, the addiction industry?
But that wouldn't be a, I would agree, but that wouldn't be an economic. You know, I don't think that is going to keep the...
In other words, paying Stab and Wagon more millions of dollars for mental health and or respite care or whatever the case might be is not going to generate a lot of economic activity, is what you're saying.
It doesn't grow wealth for yourself either, for others. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Our own wealth.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what we all want, is to grow wealth for ourselves, you know, and move up that chain. And as we get older, our house is getting paid down, our bank accounts are getting a little more for retirement. I don't see where behavioral health is going to grow the economy around us.
The Oregon Economic and Revenue Forecast report that you've been reading, State Representative Duane Yunker, is it relatively optimistic or as far as trying to reverse some of these trends with factories shedding jobs and things like that? Or are they kind of going along with the status quo that we're not going to be a manufacturing head of any sort? We're not really going to make stuff. We're just going to tax people who bring their pensions here to Oregon. I don't know. It just seems that way. What are they looking at?
I think the Dems are relying on marijuana, the Intel, and the lottery instead of manufacturing our we have a great state of natural resources, and all we do is attack them. You know, we don't use them. We're not using the things we have here. We've done that over my lifetime of 40 plus years living here. We shut down industries. We attack them. We it's the spotted owl, or it's things we build here. It's gravel pits, or it's water for, foods, or we do all the wrong things to grow our industry here, but we want to grow, government. And I would say government should be less, and we should be pushing, jobs and people. And then the families would stay. Wouldn't families stay here if there was jobs here? Wouldn't they stay here and grow there?
And then you'd probably have a better birth rate here, too. I don't know. Of course, maybe what you're talking about, though, is really part of the plan here, State Rep Yunker. And the reason I bring this up is that everything about the state of Oregon policy has always been about restricting the use of carbon. Right? Everything is about carbon neutral. We're going to be carbon free. We're not going to have any fossil fuels. Carbon free, carbon free. Well, going carbon free or carbon neutral as it goes is essentially an anti-family kind of point of view. Has anyone considered that in the state of Oregon?
I think Republicans see that this is a killer to the state of Oregon. I really do.
But do Democrats understand that when you're going to say that we're not going to really look at manufacturing, we're not going to, but we are going to try to build more schools for non-existent children? you see what I'm getting at? It just seems a little odd. Is it kind of a make-work kind of thing just to give the appearance of economic activity for the time being?
Yeah, I would totally agree with you. You got to remember that. When you look at the Democratic Party or where they come from, a lot of these people are elected to office and their backgrounds, it's usually not farmers or the trucking industry or the business industry. You know, a lot of them are former union people. You know, they're former government workers, or, you know, they're that's where they come from, that sector. They're not job grow people. So Republicans are usually, if I look at my colleagues, they're in the farming industry, the trucking industry. They're, you know, they have manufacturing. Those are the jobs that Republicans usually hold, or, you know, they're hardworking, you know, blue collar worker. I don't understand where the, you know, and just look at this. You know, on Friday, I know I'm kind of going to go off a little bit here. On Friday, the state of Oregon, you know, the governor put all these people for boards, you know what I'm saying? The Oregon Education Board or these different boards that they're going to be on, you know, and one in Grants Pass was a lady from Rogue Community College. What has she been on? She's been a part of the union rep. She's been the AFDL. She's been all these. And now she just got voted by, you know, the senators to be on the Oregon Education Board. Well, it's just another union person.
So this explains why another union person on the board then will be pushing for more schools, even though the fertility rate of Oregon would say that we don't really need to have additional schools.
I would. It's all, yeah, it's really backwards why you would think you want certain people in different positions or on these boards to have the experience, you know, promoting our economic stuff. Instead of it, the governor is promoting people that belong to the unions that obviously give their coffers, and it's just a really bad way to do business.
Okay, so she promotes her political cronies that have the agenda, the Democratic agenda in mind. This is disappointing because ultimately, if they continue to be with an anti-job, an anti-economic activity, but a pro-expense kind of way of life, there will come a point in which we do run out of those other people's monies because, you know, federal government's not going to be doing grant stream funding here forever, I don't think, Dwayne. What say you?
I would agree. I mean, at some point, you can't keep taking from the working class people because they're just going to leave the state of Oregon. They're going to leave. They're going to, you know, why would you have a business here? You would take it somewhere else, a more friendly business. You can't, you need to have more pro-business. You need to give to manufacturing, growing stuff that's going to promote jobs, pay taxes, and not just hit the. They always want to hit the rich. I would say at one point, how long will Nike stay here? How long will Intel stay here? At some point, they're going to get tired of being taxed to death.
My final question I would have for you: with lack of manufacturing and manufacturing continuing to shed jobs, is there any role that state land use planning plays in this demise, or are the two not related, in your opinion?
You know, I don't really know that answer. I would say that our state land use laws are extremely burdensome on bringing jobs here or manufacturing here. Everything we do is very burdensome on builders. You know, I have some meetings out of things, and builders are always complaining to me how long it takes to get things going.
I'll tell you what, not that I would want to place a burden on you here, but if you could, I'll have you back on in a week or two if you want to, you know, ask around there and talk to some various people involved in actually manufacturing and bringing jobs and such. And maybe if you could report back what effect Oregon's land use law has on this. We're the only state that does land use law like this. And everyone was making a big deal that, you know, the governor was saying, oh, we're going to change some or allow more housing in here and change the urban growth, you know, rules. Remember that sort of thing?
Well, if I remember that very well.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess the question would be, why do you need that law? Because it obviously won't let people get housing that they need. And, you know, at some point, I think the key of what is happening to so much in the state of Oregon, unlike California, even crazy California doesn't have land use laws like we do, all right? But California, no. Nevada, Idaho, Washington, none of them have this. And yet you can't help but notice that Oregon's always the first into a recession and last out of it. I can't help but think that the inability to be able to build where you want to may have a good part to do with this. And maybe you get back to me on that. Ask around, okay? Could you do that?
I will try to do that, Bill, with all my other jobs.
Yeah, I know. But maybe we do it in a month or so, something that you do in your spare time. But I know that you have to work your main job today. But hey, thanks so much for the report on this one. The Oregon Economic and Revenue Forecast. Getting more of the same that we didn't ask for, good and hard. Bottom line, right?
Yes, I hate to be the doom and gloom on Monday.
Well, that's not doom and gloom. It's just kind of like, it's not doom and gloom. It's just sort of like a status quo in Oregon, which is a little doomy and gloomy when it comes to the economic and revenue, okay?
We just keep doing the same bad things and hoping for a better outcome.
Okay, all right. Well, maybe you could do it differently. Appreciate the call there. Thanks, Dwayne.
Thank you, Bill. Bye.
It's a little nutty, I know, but... I would venture a guess that if you were to really go, why wouldn't a company want to locate out in Oregon? And I would have to almost guarantee you that it's mostly state land use boards, state land use laws. We're the only state in the entire country that does that.